Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the longest running tabletop wargaming podcast on the planet. And we are a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. So I want to welcome all of you to this episode of Wargaming Recon. It is episode 167, Hexographer 2 with Joe Wetzel. So as you can guess, whether you're a new or longtime listener, you know that when I have a name in the intro for the name of the show, that means we have a special guest with us. And that is true this time. Before I go further, I want to let everyone know that we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff, and I don't expect you to remember it all. It's too much. You listen when you're commuting, you're gaming, you're painting. You can't do it all. But you can remember one thing. You can remember the link to the show notes, which will be wargamingrecon.com/WR167. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR167. So I want to take the time right now to introduce our very special guest. As I had mentioned, his name is Joe Wetzel. He is the head honcho of Inkwell Ideas, and he creates a lot of fantastic gaming-related software. Today we're going to be talking about Hexographer 2, but he's done a lot of other products, so I'm sure some of those will come up in the course of this episode. And if you're not familiar with them, please check them out and go on and look at the Kickstarter and all his other stuff, because I think you'll be very, very pleased by it. So at this point, Joe, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fabulous. Yep.
I am so excited that you're here because, as listeners probably may not know, way, 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 way back, I reached out to you when you were doing the original Hexographer and asked about it because I was very interested in using it for military campaigns and kind of a bridge between role-playing and wargaming, creating imaginary nations and that sort of stuff. And I thought Hexographer would be the perfect tool for me to use. So when I saw that you were doing Hexographer 2 on Kickstarter, I said, well, first of all, I need to back it. And second of all, I need to find a way to get you on the show.
Yeah. We've been trying to go back and forth for a while. I'm glad that we've been able to get together here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Hexographer 2, what it is, and its life story, as it were.
Okay. Well, Hexographer is something along the lines of 7 or maybe even 8 years old now, which amazes me. But people still show interest. We still sell a couple of copies a day, so that's nice. And I just looked at things, and there's a lot of things I want to overhaul. We wanted to update the user interface, bring it to a more modern look, as well as using more modern library of user interface widgets and approaches and so forth. And also, kind of because it had been kind of growing organically for a while, the code kind of wasn't as clean as it could have been. And so re-architecting things kind of from the ground up gives us a chance to kind of revisit that, streamline everything on the back side of things and the code side of things, but then also allow us to revisit some features that people have asked for a while that were difficult to do in that old approach, in the old architecture, but now are easier. Kind of one of the biggest examples of that is undo redo functionality. We didn't put it in early because, to me, it was always just a matter of adding text terrain, like switching it from forest to mountains or something, was easy to do one way or the other. But then, so there was no need for it originally. Then you kind of go on and add in shapes and editing of lines and so forth. And then you wish that you had that ability to undo redo. So now we can revisit that and put that in from the ground up. So that's kind of a key example of one of the things we can get by kind of starting over from a fresh ground up approach.
One of the things that really makes me happy is that you are talking about that undo redo feature. I agree with you. It was something in the original, and I know not everyone listening has used Hexographer. I would suggest that they do because you're offering it half off right now, aren't you, as part of the Kickstarter experience?
We wanted to do something nice for everybody because I'm a consumer first, and I wanted to say, okay, we can make it half price for the old version, make the new version half price, and people can come into the product fresh and get the product, or people can try out the old one and just have it for half price if they want, as well as people who have been using the product for years, you know, they can re-up again for half price because we don't go with a subscription model. It's not something where I'm going to get an extra dollar or two from you every month. It's just you put in the $20-$30 and you're done. And it went on, like I said, this is 7 or 8 years old now. So, you know, you kind of get your value out of it.
Back with some of the original maps that I had created, I would find that, you know, if I messed up, I would do like you had said, you could just change the hex over and do something different. But when it came to drawing the rivers, for example, and you get it going and you're trying to choose, like, do you want it to look more meandering or do you want it to just go from middle of the hex to end of hex? But if you do something a little more complex with it and you're trying to undo it and you realize you made a mistake, there was no easy way to do it except start from scratch. So knowing that that is going to be different in the new version makes me very happy. And like you, I think, because of the model that you're using for this, I'm someone who is not such a fan of subscription models for most things. Some things it's okay, but if I saw that your software was out and it was, you know, you pay $20 a month or whatever, I would think, well, maybe I don't want it because I use enough stuff for the show here that some of it is subscription and there's no way around it. And other things, it's a one-time use. And I'm someone who's like, if I buy it, I should be able to use it forever. It shouldn't be like, I got to keep on paying you $5 every month to have access to your stuff. And that would be a huge turnoff for me and maybe for other people as well. So I like that, you know, you get it. And then it's easy too because I've moved from one computer to another and I've lost access to my license so that I've been able to just contact you in email actually. And you know, in this day and age, that's unheard of, just being able to email someone at a company, get a live person responding and you'll say, oh, here's your license and you go ahead, you can use it on your new machine and no problems whatsoever. The customer service is fantastic, I gotta say. You've been that way.
You're one of the lucky ones. Occasionally I'll be on vacation or something and things pile up and I'm like, I'm overdue to reply to that one in a week. And so if you don't hear back within 2 days, send me another message.
But you know what though? I think people need to kind of be understanding. What you're doing is very much kind of like a one-man-ish kind of shop. And it's a cottage industry. So you're liable to get a lot of great experience, user experiences and customer service experience. But at the same time, I think us as consumers need to realize, okay, these people, they have lives. You're going to be going somewhere, vacation, you're doing stuff with friends, with family, whatever. You can't be tied to
this exactly happened 2 weeks ago. I was in Las Vegas for a 20th reunion with some friends of mine. Back in a former life, I did some work for a band and became friends with some other people. And we'd go out to Vegas regularly. And so I was out until 3 a.m. in Vegas partying. 6 a.m, phone goes off, somebody asking for support because they didn't get a license, get it emailed to them automatically from the assistant or something. So that wasn't the best day to get a 6 a.m. wake-up call on West Coast time. But we managed to make it work.
Well, and do you know what? That's the thing. I've never had an experience where if you weren't able to get to something right away, you end up making up for it in the end. And so for me, no one's going to be 100% of the time. It's how people take a situation and flip it around and make it a great experience. And so that's something I think that you and Inkwell Ideas have done very, very well. And you've done many projects, both on Kickstarter and you have your own Patreon campaign. And even before that, just through your web shop, you've done a lot of this kind of stuff. So you're not new to it. It's not like you're a first timer doing Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. I did an episode way back where I kind of gave 5 tips sort of for my listeners to consider when they want to back a crowdsourced kind of project, whether it's Kickstarter, Indiegogo, you know, whatever it is. And one of the things I've said is you really have to kind of get to know the creator and know their past experiences. So when I see your name, I know a project's going to get completed. It's most likely going to get funded, which I know is not really under your control, but people love what you do, so they're going to back you. It's going to get done on time. It's going to get delivered, and it's going to be a great product. And so for me, it's a sure thing. So I can say, hey, I'm going to give you my money because I'm going to get, one, what I want, and two, it's actually going to come. Too many Kickstarters, that doesn't happen. And not always at the fault of the person doing the Kickstarter, just things kind of get bigger than they anticipated.
Well, that's something that really surprised me. I was looking at other Kickstarters that have been done, and, you know, Hexographer 2 has been on my radar for probably a year and a half to really do it. But then things come up that kind of get in the way. It's like, oh, I've got a great idea. Hey, the 5th edition D&D OGL came out. Oh, I've got all this monster art for all these cards. I should update those with 5th edition stats and put that out as the next Kickstarter. So that bumped doing Hexographer 2, which I had already kind of been doing behind the scenes. But anyway, the point being is the number of projects that are software in games that are just like screenshots and they get funded. I'm like, and they get funded by like 4x, 4 times. And I'm like, what am I doing here looking at my sales day to day? You know, hey, can I keep on doing this or not? And there's somebody who has vaporware that's absolutely nothing, just some screenshots. But, you know, I think that's why it was super important to me to get a demo version of Hexographer 2 out there in time for the Kickstarter. So I didn't want to launch the Kickstarter until that was out there. And it's there. You know, it's an early version of the program. There's a lot of features held back. There's some bugs in there. But, you know from following the updates that I put out, you know, now that Gen Con is over, I'm able to kind of get back into adding the features. And so like last night I was working on the coastlines, and making those look prettier. The day before I was working on the river generation for it to automatically make the rivers. Today I've been working on placement of, cities, you know, based on the resources. And actually that kind of segues into something else that I know you're going to ask about. So I'll just jump the question here, but, one of the things that we're looking at doing with Hexographer is kind of making it, you know, the original Hexographer would make just a map of terrain. And then we did a one-off kind of a freeware version of a tool that would do a world map generation thing that's on our website on Equal Ideas. And for the longest time, the idea was to merge those together. And that freeware one had a better algorithm behind generating the world for you. Where you could choose the amount of vegetation you wanted, the amount of land you wanted, how mountainous do you want your planet to be. And so that got folded in already into the demo version of Hexographer 2. But then that also was doing something where it would come up with the different cultures and nations of your world. And so that's kind of where we're going too with some of this through the stretch goals. You know, the coastlines that I mentioned were our stretch goal. The rivers were a stretch goal that we already hit. This idea of populating the map with empires and cities and castles and so forth, if you want. You know, if you don't want that, you don't have to run that part of the algorithm. But it kind of gives you something to get started with your map if you want to have some things placed from the get-go.
The reason why I originally kind of went hunting and ended up finding the original Hexographer is a man who you may or may not be aware of, but he's definitely aware of you. His name is Henry Hyde. He's a well-known historical wargamer, former now magazine editor, published author, Amazon bestseller, and all that kind of stuff. He loves maps. It's just cartography is one of his passions in life. And he kind of got me started with creating my own imaginary historical campaigns and setting them in the world and making it really rich. So he has this whole series that kind of explain how to create a world. And since he's talented artistically, he can get down and he can draw a map by hand or in, you know, one of the Adobe pieces of software or whatever. And he can make it beautiful and he puts it in his books and all this kind of stuff. And you look at it and you go, oh, and I want, and I am someone who should be shot if I get near anything artistic, colored pencils or whatever. I can't do it. So I said, there has to be a piece of software out there for someone like me who shouldn't even pick up, you know, a crayon. It's just someone who wants to do this kind of stuff, but can't do it on their own. And something that should be intuitive and easy to use. And so I came across Hexographer. And the same kind of stuff is happening with Hexographer 2. So I think it's a sort of piece of software
we should have led with this question because we can, we can talk about what the heck Hexographer is for people who haven't seen it before. The Hexographer, you know, specializes in making maps that, you know, in a couple of styles where if you're happy with those styles, and those would be the old known world Mystara style, as well as the first edition World of Greyhawk style maps. And it does that by stripping away all the features of a Photoshop or Inkscape or other CAD programs. It strips away all those features that you wouldn't need to make a simple map and in those styles. And so you can go ahead and just get to making it auto generates the map too for you if you want to have something to get started with. And so that's where it came from for Hexographer 1.
Well, I can tell that a lot of the people who like Hexographer and your other piece of software, Cityographer, and then of course Dungeonographer, and now Hexographer 2, that they come from an RPG background, and I'm guessing you might have a similar kind of gaming background. So I recommended Hexographer and now the Kickstarter for Hexographer 2 to people who are really involved with the RPG field. I've mentioned it to people like Tim Kask and Frank Mentzer, who kind of were there in the beginning with Gary Gygax and helped create all the stuff in Greyhawk, and other game designers say, you know, you're doing this popular game series. Maybe you should consider this. Mm-hmm. Be good for fleshing out some of your maps when you run a campaign or whatever. And obviously my interest is more on the military history kind of side of things. So I appreciate that. One of the ways I feel that you've kind of expanded the life of the program is through the use of your icon set. Mm-hmm. So you have these beautiful icon sets and ones that I don't even know if they're all going to get made, but there was a poll recently on the Kickstarter asking people which ones they wanted. And anyone who's a backer who happens to go and look at that will see me and all the ones I listed. They're all like the real historical ones of like ancient Rome and Greece or whatever. Yeah. And so I like that you have that out there for people who want to use this in maybe a different kind of genre than was intended.
Well, you're right. I do come more from the role-playing game side of things, but I do, you know, have a heavy background in BattleTech and some other war games. So yeah, I try to keep that in mind, and I try to, you know, I look at, oh, what if I wanted to play an Axis and Allies style game in Hexographer? Well, let me look at all the different unit types that I would need to do that. Okay, let me put those in for people, and then try to expand it out from there. So we definitely did, and you mentioned about the icon sets, and you know, so the new Kickstarter, there's a whole new icon set of a more realistic looking set that's going to include, as well as the ones that are currently included already. And we're going to try to expand those, and you know, through the stretch goals, that's something where, yeah, hopefully we'll be adding Greek and Roman and Egyptian and, you know, modern and so forth. The plan right now is, shortly we'll have, maybe by the time this gets posted, I don't know exactly the timing, how it's going to work out, but, Keith, the artist who, does most of, the icons and, cartography for us, he's working on a number of flat style, the alternate classic is what we call it, style of icons right now. He just finished these isometric style, which are the more realistic looking ones, two samples in each of those different genres, if you will. And then now he's doing two samples in this alternate classic style. And once we get those done, should be a couple of days, maybe by the time this gets posted, then we'll put out a poll to figure out, you know, we've already agreed on which are our next two stretch goals. One of them is the orc ones that we're doing right now. I think the other one is the Greek ones. And then after that, we're going to look at the answers to this poll to see which of these other cultures we're going to add in.
For these stretch goals, you have a ton of them. Why don't we talk about them a little bit?
Sure.
And let's talk about, actually, let's back up and talk about the reward levels for people, because I think people, if they've been listening to the whole show by now, and people normally do, they're thinking, okay, this sounds great, or at least I hope they are. I want to get in. What's it going to cost me? So why don't we just kind of work our way through some of the reward levels and what ones you think are your favorites?
Okay.
I guess.
Okay. I'll start at the beginning just because it's the beginning. There's a $3 pledge level. It's just kind of added in a couple of names, suggested names for our name generators that we're going to be using for these, you know, cities and NPCs and stuff that might be involved. Then we go up to, I think the next one is just an icon set. So if you wanted to just, if you're one of the people that is artistic and wants to learn Photoshop or knows Photoshop or some other tool, you could grab our icons and use them with some other software. And so if you wanted one of the icon sets, then you could get that at the next level, which is $16, I think. $19 is kind of your buy-in, the upgrade price for Hexographer 2. Now that assumes that you've got Hexographer 1 or you want to get it from our website now, because there is a higher level pledge, $35, for Hexographer 1 and 2. But my thinking was, well, why wait until after the Kickstarter is over? And in fact, you'd have to wait until 2 weeks afterward, because it takes some time for the money and the pledges to all get cleared up and everything. So why make people wait? Why not just come to my website, get the current version for $16 there if you don't have it, and then pledge for the new version at $19? Either way, so it's $35 if you want to get it through the Kickstarter, or $35 to $16 plus $19 through Kickstarter, through our website. But what I'm really trying to get people to is I'm really trying to get people into getting Hexographer and both of the icon sets. That's at $50. There's a $35 pledge as well for one icon set if one of them is interesting to you, but one, the other isn't. And the two icon sets, again, there's this isometric, realistic kind of civilization computer game style. And then there's a style that's kind of like the old Mystara style, like maps that were done for TSR's games, but kind of updated and given a little bit more color and punch. So those are the two icon sets that are available. And so at $35, you can pick either one, and at $50, you kind of get both. And the cool thing about the icons, though, is, you know, every $2,500, we've got a number of stretch goals. Kind of we're alternating. There's a stretch goal for feature, for a new feature, and then a stretch goal for an extra 10 to 15 icons. And we kind of go back and forth. So at $1,500 for extra from the previous level is going to be feature, then another $1,000 for icons, and $1,500 for features, $1,000 for icons. And we keep on staggering it like that. Initially, each icon set was only promised to be about 100 icons. Now we're at 145 and 130 just because we hit one of the stretch goals for icons, but not the matching one yet. But they'll even out eventually. That's what I'm trying to get people into. And then with the higher level rewards, we've got a level that gets you a mug and a Hexographer logoed mouse pad, and then a level that includes alpha access. So if you love the program and want to see it develop and kind of be involved in that and have more of an opportunity to give feedback, I'll take feedback from everybody because I don't want to screw up. And if you can recognize one of my screw ups early, well, that's a good thing. It's easier to fix it earlier than later. But regardless, people that are part of the alpha program will be getting builds every 2 weeks after the Kickstarter is complete that will include the kind of the changes so far, and that will run until we're done. And the nice thing about all of this, you know, stretch goals, one of the cardinal sins with Kickstarters and stretch goals is, you know, people sometimes back themselves into a corner and they end up over-promising and then they blow their deadlines because of the stretch goals. Well, in our cases, you know, this is software and I can ship, you know, I'm going to make sure that, you know, I have a version ready to ship, you know, when promised. And then I can add in the extra features that, you know, haven't quite been done yet if necessary. So if I end up promising 30 extra features and only have time to do 10, well, okay, then the next month we'll probably get 5 or 6 more. And the next month we'll probably get 5 or 6 more. So we'll continue rolling them out. The same thing with the icons.
I actually really like how you've done your stretch goals. I think that people who haven't been sure whether they want to dip into backing a Kickstarter need to look at yours, because I think it's a really good example of how to do it well. Not all Kickstarters are done well, and as you kind of alluded to, I haven't backed a whole lot of Kickstarters. I'll come out and tell people that now. I think I backed, I'm looking at my list now, I think like 9, 8. Hexographer 2 is my 9th, I guess. I'm very, very particular about what I back, and when it comes to software, I'm usually hesitant because, like you mentioned earlier, people have a screenshot of a concept drawing and they say, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm happy that you're going to do that or that you think you can. But I know that may not always work out. When I looked at Hexographer 2's, I saw, wait a sec, here's an actual video. Video's in good quality video. It shows the project. It shows what's happening, what's being done, what you can do with it. It's early stages, of course, but it's there. It's not, well, here's something I sketched on a napkin on what's going to happen. Maybe if you give us all the money and then we can think about actually making prototypes. You actually had said, here's a prototype. Here's what it is. Do you like it? If you do, you should back us. It's so that we can do really cool stuff. And the alternation between those stretch goals, it was a great way to do it. And that's one thing that I was very interested in because honestly for me, I am not a fan of the isometric icons. I like the more classic kind of look, but I know some people will love those isometric ones, and for them, those are great. So out of the different icon sets, the standard one would be of interest for me. So if all of the icons were at the end, and you know, the ones that I really wanted were at the very, very bottom of the list, I'd be like, oh man, I'm never going to get those. Do I really want? But by going between awesome features and cool graphics and back and forth, you've been pinging, but it's amazing. Like every other day, it's like another stretch goal has been met, another stretch goal has been met.
Well, you know, and you want that. As a Kickstarter creator, and we can file this into how to do Kickstarter well, you want to be able to have news about the project that's good to put out there. because that's your thing. I don't want to go too far into the details of some of this, but you know, you want to be able to go out onto some of the message boards that allow you to post about your Kickstarter and say, hey, look, we're funded and we've got this thing already. And if we get a little bit more, we're going to have this extra feature. And that gives you the opportunity to go out there and spread the news in a positive way. And on the other side of it, you don't want to be there. And I have been there with some of the other projects, where you're kind of like, you know, we're halfway there. I know we're going to get there because, you know, it's still, you know, we're still 2 weeks away and you pretty much can see Kickstarter's double in the last couple of days. But you don't have anybody, you're not on anybody's radar for anything, you know, to put the news out there other than saying, please support my Kickstarter. So.
I was just looking now at the total and I'm sure it'll be different by the time people listen to this episode, but it's only 273, I think it is, if my math's right, dollars away from reaching the next stretch goal, which is the ruins, notes generator. Do you want to talk about the generators a little bit? Because there's a bunch of different ones. There's one for city notes and castle notes and, now this ruin one. And
yeah, the notes generators, so as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we had this freeware, version of a world creator, if you will. And in there, it would create a number of cultures for your world, and then a number of nations based on those cultures, and there could be some overlap where a culture could be responsible for multiple nations, and then religions, where the religions would be tied to the cultures as well, and it would mark on the map where each of these nations were as well. And it would give you some bare bones information, just a couple of bullets about each of those cultures and each of the religions in particular, because in D&D style games, you want to know, you know, what is my God, the God of, you know, truth or law or, you know, healing or whatever, because that can affect people's powers. So we wanted to expand that. And so these, additional generators, so most of that's already in the tool. Although I do want to expand what's there to give you, instead of a two or three bullets, give you maybe 10 different bullets. But the idea is, like with a ruins generator, what's the age of these ruins? What were they originally? What's the current state of the ruins now? Have they been taken over by skeletons or zombies or goblins or whatever? You know, and, you know, if they've been taken over by one group, maybe there's two groups or maybe there's a boss. And so kind of giving you just bullet points, then you can expand that out, you know, if you want to. And you could regenerate those as well. So the idea would be, oh, I don't like this one. Let me regenerate until you get something that's close. And then you can go ahead and take those, you know, 5, 8, 10 bullet points and expand that out into some pros. Fire up Dungeonographer and say, okay, here's my ruins, that are mapped out now with Dungeonographer. So that's the idea.
I'm someone who, I'll enjoy spending time, you know, creating my world in, Hexographer 2 now when that comes out. And just kind of going in when I have time doing that in the computer. But then there are times where I'm not going to have time to do that. And I want to get out and I want to play a game. But I need the core information to go and to do that. So knowing that these are options makes my life easier, because for me with gaming, the focus is always about having fun and having fun with other people who I'm playing games with. Everything else is incidental. Yeah, I like to, you know, put models together or things like that. I'm not always going to have the time to do it, but I want to make sure I have the time to get to the tabletop, to do something there. So if I can just run some generators and say, okay, here's what we got. And then you get there and you can take that. And especially if you're an experienced gamer, I think you can then take all that information and you can weave whatever tale you want to weave, whether it's a D&D campaign, whether it's a war game campaign. And you're like, okay, we got these civilizations. They're going to fight over this river here because that's your border.
And stuff. You know, throughout developing this, I've been kind of playing a little bit of Civilization, the computer game, to kind of, at first, it was a good way to justify buying the software, to look at the graphics. It was nice to expense the purchase of the program. But anyway, I've only fired up maybe 5 or 6 different days for a few hours each time. Probably one of those times, probably 8 hours, but I digress. But it's still not over. That first game that I was playing is still not over. So I kind of see, you know, one of the ways that I might, and that I'd like to expand this is to, you know, say, hey, we've got a map creation program. We've got a tool that generates the coastlines and the rivers and populates the whole map with, cities and ruins and whatever if you want them. Why not dial that back a little bit and, you know, generate the map, the ruins, the map, the rivers, the coastlines, give you a starting village, and then make a simplified version of a civilization style game and kind of, so that's something that's on my radar that I'd like to, you know, if I dream big, with the stretch goals, that's kind of one of the directions that I want to go in.
Well, and I know some wargamers take a lot of joy from playing solo war games. I'm someone who I like to be with other people and play, but some people, they want to be at home or they don't have others near them. So they want to be able to play a game by themselves. And it's hard because how can you make sure you don't cheat in your favor of one side or the other, you know? So having something like that where the computer can do some of that, or someone who doesn't necessarily know everything about what you're doing can just kind of easily look at the computer and figure out some of the stuff that's going on.
Well,
they can
then
kind of help you.
With what we're doing here with Hangouts, you know, there's an opportunity to do it with other people where you screen share the one app and, you know, people. And not a great time. This was actually several years back, but I played, I don't know if you've heard of it. There's the free Dawn of Worlds game.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
So it's basically, you know, each player, you can have four or five, however many players you want, is kind of a god, and you start with a map where you just draw in a landmass, and then you're evolving you have a race, and you can evolve your race or evolve other races in different ways and expand from having one city to an extra city and expanding empires and stuff. And so it seems like that's something that would be really cool for a hexographer to be able to do.
Yeah, I can see that as being a really good feature for you.
And it's a way for you when you're going to play a campaign. If you want it in, again, I'm skewing a little bit to the role-playing game side of things, but if you've got some people that want to start a new campaign, to kind of get buy-in from all the players, because sometimes you'll have some players that don't know what's going on. What are these gods again? Or where am I on this map? And they don't know. Well, if they help build the world together, they'll know all that, you know, so that's something that some groups like to do, is to collaboratively build their game world. So yeah.
There's one feature that I think you're spending a fair bit of time anyway working on, enhancing, that I can see being of particular value to wargamers, and that's the use of child maps, because when I look at Hexographer and Hexographer 2, I think, okay, this is something I'm going to use to create, you know, a few nations, and the nations are going to go to war, and they're going to have some sort of reason why someone shot so-and-so's archduke or something. And so they're going to get into conflict. But when you drill down to the actual battlefield, you want to know, like, is there a village nearby? Like, what's going on? And maybe not, you know, literally, like, 500 feet, but generally, what's going on in, like, the eastern part of a state, so to speak, or something like that. So through the use of child maps, you're able to kind of take your greater terrain and then get closer. And I like also that with this, you're kind of blending terrain types a little bit, which is something I had hoped and dreamt for a long, long time, and I wasn't sure if that was even possible. So I'm excited to see that that's something I'm not the only one.
It's something, you know, Hexographer has had a very basic child map functionality, which is just basically it'll spawn a new map of a section you highlight, and then they're disconnected. There's nothing to them that save as separate files and so forth. So it's enough to get you started, but if you want to make changes, they don't really cascade. So the idea with Hexographer, we've had enough people ask about the child map functionality and want to see something, some improvements to it. So the idea was, well, let's see if we can keep that all in one file and then allow you to kind of have it auto-generate the levels that you're not on the first time you visit those next levels. So there's actually going to be four levels. We're probably going to be hard coded to those four levels, and it's going to be a world level, continent level, which, you know, it'll allow you to, it'll be the entire map, but it's just going to be kind of when you're thinking on that continental scope, if you will. There's going to be a kingdom level, which would be smaller, and then a province level. And the idea is, a lot of people like to, there's a notion in role-playing games of a 6-mile hex, because you can break that down to 1-mile hexes. So you go six across, there's six hexes. So the idea is you can have a map that you can change that ratio throughout. Anytime you create the map for the first time, you'll be able to set it to 5-1, 6-1, 10-1, whatever you want it to be. But the idea is there that you're going to be able to see those changes reflect, where if you move the city on one level, you'll have the opportunity. This is where it gets really tricky from a user interface perspective. When do you cascade those changes? When does the user want those changes to take effect on the world map when you're editing the province map, for example? And when don't you? Because on the province map, you might want to be precise about where that village is, but on the top level, you might not want to move it. Or a better example would be like a river. On the world map, you might not have be as precise with the exact curve of the river, because you don't want to have a processing overhead of having, 5,000 points for every river that's on the world, because we don't want to slow down the whole system. But where you might want to keep your river to being 100 points, for example. Whereas on the lower level, you're going to want that river to have 5,000 points because you want to know every bend of it. So that's where the magic will happen. And yeah, that's something that I'm thinking about. And I've got a couple of approaches to it that I think people will be happy with. But the proof is in the pudding.
Yours is a skill set that I don't have, but I greatly admire. And one of the things that I admire the most about it is you're able to take what I'm sure are very complicated concepts and you make it easy for me as an end user to do what I want to do, even if I don't realize I want to do it. And I just start poking around and I'm like, wait, I can do this. That's cool. A few clicks and I'm done.
And a perfect example of that is, like right now with the river generation and having to relearn 10th grade geometry for how to angle the rivers so that, if we're going, basically the river generation happens by picking a high point semi-randomly and then trying to find the lowest adjacent hex and draw a river to the center or somewhere roughly in the middle of that hex, and then find the next lowest adjacent hex and then draw the river and keep on going until you get to an ocean. And so figuring out, the exact geometry involved in making a line into a polygon because you want to have a less natural shape to your river than just being a straight line. It is something that, I'm constantly going, y equals mx plus b, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. And fortunately with Cityographer, that's still somewhat fresh in my mind. The first time I had to go and relearn all that stuff was with Cityographer and placing the buildings. Because Cityographer will allow you to automatically generate a city. It generates the street network and it generates all the buildings on the streets. Well, anytime you're going to put a building, you want the building rotated so it aligns up with the road that it's on. And so you've got to figure out, I've got to get the slope of the line that I'm on, and then I've got to invert that slope, and then I've got to change the rotation of my map object to match that. And I also have to make sure that my new map object isn't on top of any other buildings on the whole map so far. So there's a lot of logic there.
Better you than me, that's what I'm going to say. Well, I want to move to one of my favorite parts of the show, and that's kind of listener feedback. I call it the mailbag, where listeners get to write in, or they go on Twitter or Facebook and things like that, and they share their feedback with me. And I know feedback's been very valuable to you on your Kickstarter, and so this is kind of like my Kickstarter feedback. Although I'm nowhere near doing a Kickstarter. So via email, I received an email from Ian Cross, who was a former guest on the show. And he had this to say about episode 165, which was my very special 10-year anniversary episode. So he said, warm congratulations on 10 years. I really enjoyed our conversation several years ago and seamlessly moving between the study I did in our own personal histories in the world of tabletop gaming. I want to thank Ian, first of all, for taking the time to write in that email. And in case people are interested, I will have a link to his appearance in the show notes, and that was episode 102. It's like a lifetime ago. I can't believe it's been so long. You were saying, Joe, that you can't believe it's been 8 years for Hexographer. And I tell you, I look and I'll say, oh, so-and-so is talking about an episode. And I feel like I just did that, like last week or whatever. And really it's been like 4 years ago. And how does that happen?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
I have a theory about this that each day is a smaller percentage of your life as you go throughout your life. And so that's why time always seems like it's flying.
We can go with that. I was going to say I would blame it on a TARDIS, but we can go with that. That's okay too. And then from Facebook, it's not feedback actually, but I want to thank one of our listeners. I want to thank Martin because he became the 1,510th person to like our Facebook page. So I want to say that if any of you are on Facebook, please take the time to like our page. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes where you can find us on Facebook. And Facebook is also a great way to leave comments and feedback and suggestions. I love to hear them all. I read them all and I try to reply to them all. I don't always have as much time to do that as I would like, but I love listener feedback. It's one of my favorite things. And it might seem odd because doing a podcast like this, I do it like I'm here and you're in Virginia, Joe. So like we're not face to, I mean, we are face to face, but we're not here together. And yet one of my favorite parts is maybe it's because of this kind of isolation. I'm in a room with a mic, but it's getting out and meeting everyone and seeing all the gamers in person and the listeners in person and getting to meet everyone and getting to know people, and just kind of forming those relationships. And, I think that's something that I would presume has been invaluable for you, Joe, with all your Kickstarters. That, and I don't know if you would say this, and maybe you are too humble to say, but I feel like you have a strong following, a dedicated group of people who love what you do and who are there every single time. And that is worth more than its weight in gold. And so I think that's incredible. And it, I think it's kind of something where people need to tip their hats to you, because it shows that you're creating something incredible, and it fills a need, which is, it's important. You know, there's a lot of wants out there, but not so many needs anymore. But that's just a little meandering on my end. I want to remind people about, some other cool things, cause like you gotta pay the bills, right? And I hate ads. So I try to avoid ads on the show, and I love that with all your Inkwell Ideas project, there's not like pop-up ads or things. Like some software you get, and it doesn't matter whether you paid for them or not, like with money or with information, they shove ads in those things. Like, click here to see about this new thing before you can use this thing for another. It drives me crazy. Or it's like listening to the radio, and every 2 seconds I feel like there's another 4 minutes of ads. And it makes me nuts, right? And yet I understand everyone, you got to pay the bills, because otherwise, like, the software doesn't get made. We can't be building our worlds or whatever.
But you're lucky, because you're able to find some ads that are tailored to the audience without prying into people's interests unnecessarily.
I try, and I mean, it doesn't hurt that this isn't my career. This is something, you know, I do in addition to my real job. So it's not like it doesn't pay my mortgage. You know, if it paid my mortgage, then I'd be like, oh, I need 40 ads in every episode. And then people be like, oh man, not another ad. We don't want to listen to this. But my version of ads is I have kind of like a brief ad in the beginning and at the end, depending on sponsorship levels. But I have this amazing group of people who sponsor the show, and it's the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. And they are a wargaming club up in Maine. They do historical wargaming, a fantastic group of guys, and they knew I needed a sponsor and they wanted to get involved and to do it because they like what I do here. And so I'm floored, first of all, that they had wanted to do that. And they run this just delightful historical wargaming convention. It's called Huzzah. It takes place in Portland, Maine, and beautiful there. I don't know if you've ever been there, Joe, but Portland is a great place if you want to go get something to eat. It's really foodie friendly kind of place, but it's just gorgeous. All the lighthouses and the sea and stuff. And of course, I love to go to Huzzah. They're going to be having it in 2017 on May 19th through the 21st. I'll be there doing a live recording. I don't have details on that yet, what date or any of that kind of stuff, but I'll be there with my wife and with the baby. Well, she's not going to be really as much of a baby then.
That's right. Be almost 3, right?
Yeah. And so she'll be getting into trouble, I'm sure. But it's a fantastic time, and it's very family friendly, which is one thing that I, of course, nowadays look forward to finding, because there's not a whole lot of them as much as you would think in the gaming world. But the MHWA, they managed to do it. So I am grateful for their support. And then I also am able to kind of do the PBS model, I guess people like to call it. I use Patreon, like I know you do, Joe. And so I have patrons who support the show, and I am so grateful for their support and their generosity. So I want to make sure that I thank, Dave and the War Games at Battleshades Facebook group, Patrick, Chris Parker of DaveBattleGames.com, and Kyle from Vermont. I have many different backer levels. You can get in for just $1 a month. That's less than a cup of coffee, and that gets you all the episodes before they come out to the public. It gets you exclusive behind the scenes content. And then I have other levels. So you can get, one level that I have that I'm really excited about, actually. It's a newish level. You can get a set of 6 custom made D6. They're wooden, they're laser engraved, and they were designed and created by Christopher Rett, who is another localish wargamer. He's done a fantastic job with these things. $18 gets some mail to your door. And then I also love, this is one that some backers have recently been doing. I'll send you a postcard every month. And that might sound kind of silly, but I am so sad that we don't write letters anymore. And the only stuff you get in your mailbox is junk mail and bills, right? I don't want to pay another bill, and I don't want to throw another piece of junk mail in the recycling bin, but I like something that's kind of cool and different. And so every month you're back at that level, I send you one of these Wargaming Recon postcards, and I'll write on the back, and I'll messages about what I'm doing, or cool stuff that's going on, or where I'm going to be, and just kind of little extra kind of things. And I send them off to you anywhere in the world. It doesn't matter. And you can get that kind of stuff. And because of all the interest on Patreon, we're close to reaching another Patreon goal here. So we've reached a few of them, and the next one is only $28 away. If we reach it, I'll be able to buy some new equipment so that I can record with guests in person at conventions and game days and that kind of stuff. And as you can guess, for a podcast, it's kind of important to have good audio equipment. We've reached a lot of goals on Patreon, and I am humbled and amazed at the same time, because really it's me talking into a mic, and sometimes I am blessed to have a fantastic guest like you, Joe, here on the show. But usually it's me talking into the ether. And so when people like, we like what you're doing and we want to support you, one, it makes me feel good that people feel value in this. And two, it's nice because that encouragement kind of helps you kind of get going. And I imagine it's the same when you're programming your software, that there sometimes kind of get stuck in something and you need that little bit of boost to get you through, because you're like, oh, nothing's working. I can't do it. And what am I going to do? And you're just like, oh man, I'm feeling down. And then something happens, right? And then you're like, whoa, you make that breakthrough and things get better. And so it's kind of cool to see that and to have all that happening. So thank you to everyone on Patreon and our sponsors as well. And Joe, do you want to just tell people how they can keep up to date with what you're doing, how they can get to the Kickstarter and go ahead and back it and all that kind of cool stuff?
Yeah, so the Kickstarter, the easiest thing to do would probably just do a Google search or internet search of your choice for Worldographer, Worldographer, and that'll get to you there. Inkwellideas.com, we've got a blog version, so if you go to the main site, you'll see a link to the blog/posts, and that'll get you the latest information of whatever's going on. Of course, right now that is mostly posts about the Kickstarter. So those are the two ways to do that.
And we've got a plug.
Oh yeah, and I was going to add, there's a mailing list as well that you can sign up for on the website.
The mailing list was great, because that's how I first heard about the new Hexographer. And I was like, oh wait, I got this email, and I'm on a lot of newsletter lists, and to be honest, I don't read most of them, but I always read yours because there's something of interest in there, and you offer free stuff, and it's not just you trying to sell stuff and make a buck off me, which I like. You give a lot more value than that. So I'm always like, oh, what's he doing? Let me see what's going on. And then that had that note in there. So there's things that you'll find out by being on the newsletter before you would otherwise find out about it. So it's really cool. And again, it's the kind of cool behind the scenes sort of stuff, a little advanced notice. Do you want to plug your Patreon too? A way for people to go on there and support you?
Sure. But the Patreon is sort of on hiatus, because the Patreon, our rewards are primarily around extra icon sets that we're going to be doing. And actually, we've had a lot of success with them, particularly kind of starting to do some themed ones. For a while we were doing, so one of the things we didn't talk about at all here is we've got a coat of arms program. And so we were going through and developing all the different symbols that you would need for kind of a Song of Ice and Fire heraldry. And another theme though that we did was we did like an Egyptian tombs theme, where all the icons for Dungeonographer in particular that month were about that. But every month we put out 15 or more icons for Hexographer, Dungeonographer, Cityographer, and the Coat of Arms program. But again, because we're doing the Kickstarter, our focus is all on that. We put that on hiatus, and we'll pick that back up probably in October. Yeah, for right now though, I'm just too busy.
Well, Kickstarter, I've talked to a lot of people who've done them. I have a lot of friends who've done them, and they've said it's basically a full-time job and then sub. So I can understand that you want to make sure you get it done. You want to make sure you get it done right and keep everyone happy, and everything else kind of gets pushed aside a little bit further down your list. It makes perfect sense. It really does.
Yeah, again, it's a matter of you're trying to get the word out any way you can. And as soon as you're done with the Kickstarter, you think of, oh, there's five other things I could have done to promote Kickstarter better. And you're like, oh, too bad. Maybe next time.
Well, I think you're doing a pretty good job of it, to be honest, because your stuff is doing really well. I think almost all of your Kickstarters have been successfully funded, reached a lot of cool stretch goals. You reached 100% funding for this, and the stretch goals are there. I think you're going to get through a lot more stretch goals because there's what, like 10 or 11 more days left in as of the time we're recording?
As of the time we're recording, yeah, that's about right. And, you know, again, in the last few days, the Kickstarters generally, a lot of people get that reminder message from the Kickstarter in the last 2-3 days. And people that were on the fence are like, oh, now this thing has all these other features in there too. Oh, okay, I'm in. Or I was 50-50, but yeah, I still want it. So they even without the extra features, they might pledge because of that reason.
People love to, you know, support a winner. And so if they see something's been funded, they know, well, my money's safe, I'm going to get it. And so they're going to go ahead and they'll back it. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show today and to talk with everyone about this. I am so appreciative that you've been on the show. And like you said, we've been trying to make this happen in one way or another for years, actually. And people don't believe me when I say that sometimes one of the most difficult parts of doing this show is scheduling people because we're all so busy and it's hard to make things match up and know things come and go and other stuff pops up. So I was glad that we were able to make this happen and to get you on here. And, I hope that you will come back, later on, and next time you have another cool project going on, we can talk about it and see what's going on with it and share that with all the people who like to listen to the show here. And just, it's cool stuff. I am a huge fan, I gotta say. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, I'm glad that you've been able to find a lot of uses for it with the wargaming as well. Like I said, I come more so from the role playing, but you know, we put in a bunch of BattleTech things in there and you know, I'm sure you can use them for other war games as well. So, definitely want to appeal to the people that are your core audience as well.
Well, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to listen to this episode. I want to remind you the next episode of the show comes out September 26, 2016. It's when I will discuss the Hobby Bunker Game Day 2016. It's a lot of fun. And if you follow me on Facebook and on Twitter, you've seen some photos. It was interesting. So I'll cover that in depth then. And to get access to all the cool stuff Joe and I talked about in this episode, such as those links, very important ones to go to the Kickstarter, to back the Kickstarter project for Hexographer 2, to get onto the newsletter and all that kind of stuff. And you gotta go to the show notes, which is wargamingrecon.com/WR167. wargamingrecon.com/WR167. And that'll set you straight and have all the cool stuff in there that you need to know. Joe, thank you again for being on the show. It was a blast, and you had an open invitation. So next time you get something cool going on, reach out to me if I don't reach out to you first, because I'm very eager to have you back.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone. And you know the drill. No matter how busy you are in your lives, no matter how much gaming's going on or how much time you're spending creating cool new worlds using your soon-to-be brand-new copy of Dungeon Hexographer 2, you know, you have to keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other great shows on the network.
This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew, who helped give the show its name. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.